Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
You don't strike me as a NASCAR guy. I got to take a break. I'm late to get to Harrington. Plus, I'm getting a phone call that I may have to get during the break. All right, see you later. Jeff Calkins Show, back in a moment, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Cock. I'm not back. Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is my brother in alley oop appreciation, Curtis Blow, with the ceremonial season starter basketball.
How do you you put stars next to? You do this thing where you look at the schedule and you put stars next to home games. Where does the opener? Are you a fan of the opener?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's the first game of the season. I think everyone's ready for basketball at that point. So there's extra ceremony with, you know, there'll be the music and whatever and the pageantry and blah, blah, blah. But really, it's just the first chance to see the team play. And so you haven't, you know, seen a game in person or on TV or whatever. You haven't seen the Grizzlies play in 5 or 6 months or whatever it is. And so, you know, it's the first time.
Who's going to address the crowd today? They're going to hand the microphone to a Grizzly player and he's going to say something about the season.
You know, Jaren tends to be the primary go-to guy for that stuff. It would be a little odd to start the season without Ja or Jaren. Maybe they get Ja to do it, but Ja doesn't really do that kind of stuff that much. And so Jaren seems like the safest bet. You know, they could throw Cedric Coward out there as the new rookie. You know, Jalen Wells, I'm looking at this poster up here. Uh-huh. That's one of the few things I've seen that's not just a Ja and Jaren promotional item. It's a Ja, Jaren, Jalen. So maybe, you know, maybe Jalen. KCP is a new guy. They have options, but typically it's Jaren.
I think it's Jaren. It'll probably be Jaren. It would be fun if it were Ja. I mean, it'd be nice if it were Ja, but I think it'll be Jaren. We were talking about this earlier. The win total is their lowest since 2020, what did you say, 2021, Jeffrey? Was it 2021? The projected win total is the lowest since 2021, which was the season that ended up in the bubble, I think, right? Is that the
I think
that,
that's right.
It's the season that ended up with the Utah series.
Yeah, they were a play-in team, and they fought their way up because they weren't. They finished ninth, I think, in the regular season, and then they made their way into the playoffs via the play-in.
How much of that's intentional? You know, do you think they thought when they did what they did, they would be worse this year?
Well, I mean, it was described as so we're willing to, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember the exact language, but it was described as basically a willingness to take a step back in order to try to take a step forward, you know, in over a period of time that will be longer than one season. So, yeah, but do I think, I mean, the reason the expectation is what it is right now, it's not because of the Desmond Bane trade. It's because of the Zach Edey injury plus the Brandon Clark injury plus the Ty Jerome injury plus the Scottie Pippen injury. And so I don't know what the number is now. I think it's gone down a game. At the beginning of all this, it was like 40.5 or 41.5, whatever. I think it's gone down a little bit. Before those injuries, like if I'm betting, man, I'm slamming the over. But it's the injuries. I think the Desmond Bane thing, and I did a podcast with Nate Duncan sort of previewing the team, and we both sort of agreed on this. And I said this before some of this rash of injuries recently, my concern with projecting the Grizzlies into this season really had nothing to do with the Desmond Bane trade. It was the front court injuries that they already had with Edie and Clark. It was the Ja Morant durability concerns. Right. It was some of that. I actually don't think swapping out the totality of the outgoing incoming on the perimeter, Bane, Luke Kennard out, Ty Jerome, Kentavious Caldwell Pope, Cedric Howard in, another year older of Scottie Pippen and Jalen Wells, I think that's kind of a wash for the season. Right. So I don't buy the because of the Bane thing. If you put Bane on this team now in the absence of some of these other guys, exactly. Sure.
Bane, if you had Bane tonight, you would feel much more. You'd feel better about the next 10 games if you had Bane and John, of course.
Obviously.
Because, A, he could play some point.
Right.
I mean, it's literally the circumstance. But it is absolutely the injuries that have. And the nice thing is that none of these injuries are, like, they're all coming back, ostensibly.
As far as we know, yeah. I mean, not to shed any doubt, right. but you never know what's going to happen. But none of them were projected to be season-ending injuries, and there's no reason to think any of them would be. The Brandon Clark thing, I'm sort of at the point where I'm not going to put stock in anything. Like it's all gravy for me now with him going forward. But the other three, yeah, and Edie should be back, you know, in a month or so, and you know, we'll see.
You said yesterday, and I agree with you totally, which is. What you hope is that emerging from this season, you have a clear sense of where they're headed and that they're headed in the right direction. I don't know how you phrased it exactly.
Well, they have a choice to make, and they need to make that choice. In theory, they could, you know, stretch it out, and we could be having the same conversation right. A year from now, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I think to some degree or another, they're going to commit to something off of this season.
Right. Well, let me drill down on that real quick then. Is that choice fundamentally about Ja? That's a Ja choice, right?
It's not Ja is the number one item on the agenda. Yes, I don't think it's just a Ja thing, but it's the fundamental item on the agenda. In theory, like I don't think this is not an operable thing at this point. But like back here in the summer, people were like, "What about a Ja Morant Trae Young challenge trade?" Well, if you did that, that doesn't change the fundamental question. You know,
right.
It's just you know,
right.
And so I don't think it's strictly a Ja Morant question, but Ja Morant is. Obviously, the number one item on the agenda when you're trying to figure out what you think your future is.
And so the number one, I mean, the best thing that could happen this year is that Ja and Jaren are both healthy, basically healthy, relatively healthy, play, you know,
yep.
North of 60 games, each of them 65, whatever it is, and play well together and look like a duo who can carry this team into the future.
Yes. The best thing that could happen is, and let's be reasonable. Let's yeah. not say yeah. you make a mad rush and you're yeah. the fifth seed or whatever. That you're the team improves over time. Ja and Jaren are both playing at an all-star/all-NBA level. Things come around enough at the end that when you get into the play-in, you're like, we're better than our record, and we could be better than this next season because Zach Edey is going to be a top 10 center in the league next season.
Right.
Cedric Howard is ready to go. Jalen ready to be a rotation player on a good team with upside from there. Jalen Wells is a quality starter. Ty Jerome and Kaleb Caldwell-Pope are good vets. We got depth. And guess what? We're going to get a top 10 pick out of this draft. And we got right. another first round pick. And we got trade assets. And like can you come out of this season thinking by following the path of building on what you have, you could be a top four, top five team in the West next season? That'd be the best case scenario.
Can you imagine,
you're ninth this year on your way to fourth next season.
Can you imagine a scenario where you feel good about where they are at the end of this season and not in a sort of a seismic retooling, but this is basically still building around John Jaren, and you feel good about where they are heading out of the season in which they have not actually made the play-in? In other words, if they are good enough to feel good about, won't they so facto make the play-in probably?
I mean, probably not, but I'm reluctant to be 100% declarative on that because that's dependent on other teams around them and what happens with other teams. That's possible, but I don't think that's likely. Interesting thing about the Grizzlies is one of the interesting things. Like ESPN has this thing that came out today, and they do so much variations of the same thing, it gets confusing. This is by Zach Cram. It's by an individual guy. And it's not like the future rankings best over the next 3 years. It's basically like a desperation ranking. Like what teams are set up to where it's most important for them to win now because of the complications they're going to have in the future kind of thing. And so the teams are ranked 1 through 30. And number one is Cleveland. And you know, because of the magnitude of their salary and everything else, like it's a win right. now for them. Denver's very high with Jokic and what right. have you. One of the saddest things that Phoenix is like fifth or sixth on this list, you know, in terms of desperation to win now, and they just can't. That's the worst place to be, right?
Right.
They are the highest ranked bad team on the list. The lowest ranked potential good team on the list is the Memphis Grizzlies. Memphis Grizzlies are like 25th or 26th on this list, and every team below them is terrible. And that's a team that does not have, by this measure, the desperation to win now because of the inability to win going forward. And they still got two guys on the team who are 26 years old, and each made two All-Star games, right. And like they could be at least a 500 team.
So their desperation is low. Why?
Because of the talent on the roster, the youth on the roster, the draft picks, the quality of the draft picks they have going forward,
and
the tools they have to win. To next year, the year after that, are much stronger than a lot of, you know, than Denver, you know, for instance, right. Or Minnesota or some of these other teams. And so it puts them in an interesting place. They're in a disappointing place, rightfully, in a disappointing place. And I think fans feel the disappointment more than the hope. They're in a disappointing place because they are not in a good position, set aside winning a title. They are not in a good position for a deep playoff run this season.
Right.
This is a team that 4 years ago won 56 games with the youngest team in the league, and you were supposed to be in a position for a deep playoff run now. There is legitimate real disappointment that they are not in that place they were supposed to be.
Right.
On the other hand, they're in a pretty good place holistically relative to most teams in the league. And when I talk about, you know, when the Bane trade created this path, but the path has a fork and they have to choose a path, they have a choice. A lot of teams are just stuck. Right. They're not moving at all. Like they busted tires and they're just stuck on the road, or there are no choices to make. There's only one path they can take, and boy, you better hope it works if that's all you got. The Grizzlies are in this interesting situation of legit disappointment, but still having fundamentally a pretty strong situation that allows you different options to have. You can have success going different ways.
Well, and the other thing that they have, and is that while they are retooling, and while they have these, you know, potential draft picks in the future and all that, they have maybe one of the most five most interesting guys to watch play basketball in the world.
We get to watch this dude play basketball tonight.
Right. It's not like, you know, you're not the Wizards or Charlotte or whatever where you've got nothing to watch as you wait for the future. You got to watch, literally, did you see the clip? It was a Premier League football soccer players. They put up pictures of Tyrese Halliburton and Jason Tatum, and they asked him to identify, and they struggled. Some got him, some didn't. Which it was, you know, that's celebrity more than
that is celebrity.
But the celebrity comes from the way he plays basketball.
Yeah, the celebrity matters for t-shirts and sneakers and what have you. Celebrity doesn't matter for Memphis Grizzlies fans watching games if he's not playing.
So the key is
he has to play, right?
He has to play,
and so the durability concerns are real, and the projection of how much longer can he be awesome is a real concern as they plan going forward. But that doesn't have to like be a cloud over your enjoyment of a basketball game tonight, wondering, okay, how many games is he going to miss this season? How good is he going to be in 3 years? If he's awesome tonight, just enjoy him being awesome tonight.
Okay. In terms of this, the fork, the choice, are there circumstances under which Ja could be awesome and healthy and dynamic and all that, and they still choose to go the let's get rid of Ja way?
The thing about all or nothing questions, the answer is always yes.
What's the circumstance? You know? In other words, if he's awesome, if they're both good, why would one, if Ja and Jaren are both healthy and playing well, that and all NBA level?
Because it's not just about this season. It's about, it's about, these two tracks, and like the train's puttering up ahead with Ja and Jaren, and the train's puttering back behind with the supporting cast. And at some point, Ja and Jaren won't keep trucking down the track forever. At some point, like, they'll go off the track because, like, you know, life happens and we get older every day. And so can the train on the second track catch up with the train on the first track before the train on the first track runs out of coal or whatever? That's kind of the problem. So if you believe you're not going to be able to close that gap in time, then you may just choose to put all your fuel into the second train. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but the first train's only 26.
This is my point. Yeah, it's only 26, but we talked about this yesterday. Is Ja Morant going to be an all-star player when he's 31? He might not. These are just a lot of stuff they have to consider.
I think, and it's what...
But we're talking so much about what's going to happen in 3 years, and there's a game tonight.
My point is that I think that you're exactly right. I have sensed, and who knows, what does the populace think? There's a lot of focus on the disappointment of, like...
This is not where the team was supposed to be.
But also, like John would say, I don't think this team is going to be as good as people think it's going to be or whatever. No one thinks it's going to be. Like, everyone acknowledged, no one with a realistic...
Drew and I talked about this yesterday when we recorded our DM pod, which is out now, if you want more Grizzlies talk today. obviously, you listen to the station, you'll hear plenty of Grizzlies talk, but we have this pod out there. And one of the points I made was that almost universally, even before the Jerome Pippen injuries, almost universally, including me and Drew, everyone's projecting Grizzlies in the playoff range, play-in range. Right. You have the playoff range, the play-in range, and the lottery range, right? And almost everyone has the Grizzlies projected in the play-in range, almost everybody.
Yeah, it's a transition year. That's what it is. It's a and there's intrigue in it, and there can be excitement in the evenings, but it's a transition year, and I think there's a lot of interesting things that could happen in terms of the so what's going to happen at point guard? Now you got Ja, he's going to play some, but I don't he's not going to play 43 minutes.
Yeah, I don't. And, there's not limited options means limited mystery. I mean,
it's going to be Javon
Morant's your starting point guard, and Javon Small is your backup point guard. And Cam Spencer is like your breaking case of emergency third point guard, also secondary ball handler, which is sort of the way they were wanting to use Jerome and Pippen and whatever. And so that's your mix. Those are the only guards you got on the whole roster. So that's what happened. And then if one of those players, you know, misses a game, then you get two left. And if the player missing the game, which history suggests will happen, is John Morant, you're in a world of hurt because your starting point guard is Javon Small, who was the, you know, the 49th pick or 52nd pick or whatever he was in the draft, who's a rookie on a two-way contract. And then Cam Spencer, who's like, I don't know, not a point guard. He's the 15th guy on the roster who's like barely played in the NBA and is not really a point guard. It's more of a shooter.
Yeah, limited options, limited mystery. In terms of the mystery, what will it be? Like the rotation is a mystery. Is it, how deep is that? Like, what are the things that are interesting? It's going to be interesting to watch basketball tonight. But in terms of the strategic,
well, I think we know the starting lineup, and I think that we've known the starting lineup. Maybe he'll throw a curveball, but I don't believe so. I think we've known the starting lineup ever since the Brandon Clark, really ever since the Zach Edey injury, because Brandon Clark wasn't going to start. And so it's going to be Ja Morant, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Jalen Wells, Jaren Jackson, Jock Landale. I think that's going to be the starting five. John Small is obviously going to play as the backup point guard. Santi Aldama is obviously going to play. He's like the sixth man, basically. Right. And then the question is who and how many after that. I think Cedric Howard is going to be in the rotation. That's the one I'm most certain about.
Right. Gets you to eight.
And then you have a question. Then you have, you know, Cam Spencer, John Conchar, Gigi Jackson, the other two-way guys, PJ Hall and Ovex Prosper. I think that's everyone. And, like, how many of those five? Could be all of them. You know, he could just play a super deep.
What do you think gets the most minutes of those five?
Well, there's a question of your willingness to play smaller. I mean, you're going to have to play smaller to some degree. PJ Hall's like 6'9". But your willingness to really play smaller, I don't think they want to do that. And so I sort of assume PJ Hall is going to play as like the backup center on the team. And then you got, you know, the Jitty, Gigi, Omax, Cam. I think Cam has to play just because they don't have ball handling. And I think Jitty has to play because he's a grown-up who can soak up minutes and he rebounds. They need someone to rebound. He rebounds better than all these dudes who are taller than him. Right. I just think he has to play right now. And so that could be it. And now we haven't put Gigi Jackson on the floor yet. And I'll note, in the final preseason game, they played a semi-regular rotation with what they had to use, and Gigi Jackson was not in the regular rotation. He played in the fourth quarter, but he was not in the regular rotation.
And what do you make of the matchup?
You know, it's New Orleans is not supposed to be good this year, but you're probably catching them at a bad time because Zion's healthy now. Yeah. You know, I mean, odds are, who knows, maybe he'll play 70. Odds are he won't, but he's going to play tonight. And so you're going to get healthy Zion. This may be the best Zion you see all season. And this is, you know, and so you get that. They are without Kevon Looney, but whatever. He's not very good. You know, he's just okay. I think that team has enough talent that they can beat you, especially given the Grizzlies' problems. A, any team can beat any team in one game in an NBA season. And then B, the Grizzlies have injury issues, and you don't know how many minutes that Ja is going to play, who missed all preseason. You don't know how many minutes Jaren's going to play, who had the toe thing. And then you're getting a New Orleans team that the three best players, Zion Williamson, Trey Murphy, Herb Jones, who are all really good, are all healthy and ready to go. Now, their center rotation's bad and their point guard rotation's bad, and so we'll see.
What'd you think of OKC Houston?
Heck of a game. It was a slobber knocker, double overtime, first game of the season against, you know, the defending champs and a team trying to take them down. So it was a heck of a game to start the season with. Houston is interesting because the talent at the top of that team is very high and the size is enormous. And you can see how that will just work. I mean, they took OKC to double overtime in their building, although without Jalen Williams, their second best player. But you also saw the limitations of their ball handling and their shooting. And, like, you know, Amin Thompson and Reed Sheppard played the point guard minutes, and they shot, like, I don't know, 2 of 15 or something from three and had a lot of turnovers. And, it, you know, some of the ball handling stuff was shaky down the stretch. And I think, you know, if a team really turns up the defense, I think more than OKC really did last night, they could have a problem. Up here in Şengün was awesome, though.
Şengün was awesome. 5 threes. He hit 21 total last year. So if he adds that to his repertoire, that's going to be. And then the Lakers were what you sort of.
I mean, it's one game, but it's a game that confirmed my prior. So I put a lot of meaning into it. It's like Luka was awesome, and Austin Reeves was good, and like everyone else was just a guy. Yeah,
we got a lot to get to today because you wrote a lot today, or you've been writing a lot. Your top 25 Grizzlies. All time.
Yeah, you're counting them down one a week, roughly. I mean, the way the season's matches up, there's an all-star break that I can build in there somewhere, and so generally one a week.
And number 25, Steven Adams, who played only 118 regular season games for the Grizzlies.
Spoiler alert, that'll be the fewest games of anyone who makes the list, so don't expect to see Seth Curry or a Donald Foyle or, you know, Tony Massenburg aren't going to be on the list.
Or Allen Iverson.
Or Allen Iverson won't be on the list, although very certainly memorable, which is part of the criteria. This is not just who put up the best numbers for the Grizzlies. And so, you know, I made a list, 25 greatest players, can put it all factors into that. But the key to me is I'm writing a little essay about each player. It's an excuse to remember guys. That's what men like to do is remember sports players, remember players in their sports. And I'm going to spend the season remembering some guys. And so this week I'm remembering Steven Adams.
Well, what I like that you remembered is the answer to the question. It was a Family Feud thing that they did.
Yeah. One of my favorite in arena moments ever.
And it was name something that moves slowly.
Yep.
And his answer?
Spoiler, but no, people know. Grandmas.
it's the best.
It's the best.
Grandmas. Also, Steven Adams, though.
Steven Adams moves slowly. Yeah. And so, yeah. So, slowness was sort of my theme. Stillness. Stillness was the move for Steven Adams. There's a little indie rock reference for you.
You can read that piece at the Daily Memphian. And you can also read your summary of what's happening in film. The Springsteen film drops this week. What are your hopes?
I think it might be bad, and I think I'm definitely going to go as soon as possible and like eat it up. And so that's what I think.
Is there any has anyone seen it to even have an early word?
It's been pretty meh on the early stuff with it. I the fact that they had to put Springsteen : on the title to me does not speak of a lot of confidence. They did not do that to the Bob. The Dylan movie was not called Dylan : A Complete Unknown, which is called A Complete Unknown. I from what I've seen in the trailer and some of the clips, it looks like Jeremy Allen White did a nice job. I don't if it doesn't come through, I don't think he's going to be at fault. I think he's done well with this, and I think from a music nerd perspective, much like the Dylan movie, they're telling a specific story of a specific moment of his career instead of like the whole life story. Although there's some flashback stuff that looks shaky to me, but the specific story they're choosing to tell, I think, is a good choice to make, and it's about. This I can tell. I haven't seen the movie yet, but it's about the decision and the process of making this album, Nebraska, in 1982, which came in between two big, like, arena rock albums, The River and then Born in the USA. And it's this thing where he's coming out of the river, he's sort of cresting, and it feels like he's on the verge of this major breakthrough, or really a second breakthrough. He was already huge. And there was a lot of pressure to make another big record like this. And instead, I'm going to go sit in a hotel room and write depressing folk songs that I record and on a boombox. And I'm going to put that out, which the record company didn't want him to do. But it was something he felt like he needed to do as a process coming out of one album and into that next. And I think it's probably his second best record. And so I think that's an interesting point in his career to look at.
And you like Jeremy Allen White?
Yeah, I mean, I like him in The Bear, and he was in the Von Erichs movie, whatever that was called. He played Cary Von Erich. But in the clips, he's looking good. I haven't seen the movie yet.
Okay. Also, I saw this Frankenstein. I was reading a piece basically saying Guillermo del Toro, this is a movie he was always wanted to make or whatever.
He made The Shape of Water, which somehow won a Best Picture Oscar, which was weird, but was sort of a gloss on Creature from the Black Lagoon. And so he's someone who's really invested in those sort of old, like, you know, universal horror movie kind of stuff. So he's making his version of one.
And then you are interested. Well, two things. Blue Moon. What's Blue Moon?
Blue Moon is a new movie by Richard Linklater. He's one of my favorite, you know, living, working directors. Dazed and Confused, Before Sunrise, that guy. This is a small little movie he made, and it's a sort of a biopic, or at least another slice from a music history. And it's about Lorenz Hart, who was the Hart and Rodgers, you know, Broadway era songwriter. And Hart and Rodgers split up, and then Rodgers went on to do Oklahoma with Oscar Hammerstein and had enormous success. And I guess Lorenz Hart, like, just drank, you know, and wallowed in depression. And so it's about him wallowing in depression in that moment.
And then Throwback Thursday, this is tomorrow, is Rear Window.
Rear Window, maybe the best movie ever made. $5 in a theater.
You love Rear Window.
I think it's an absolute masterpiece. It's maybe the most perfect movie ever made.
And it's at, where is it?
Studio on the Square.
Studio on the Square, tomorrow night. $5, Rear Window. All right, thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back, talk to Sam Hardiman on the other side. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Sam Hardiman. Sam Hardiman covers the city for the Daily Memphian. I urge you to read his stuff over there. So, Sam, I recently, though, before we get to the city, I saw someone was comparing your quarterback to Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger is the new... What do you think?
That's gross. You know, it's not just for, like, you know, the things that Ben Roethlisberger is accused of or whatever. It's more of just... Trickbait's better than that. Like, wait...
Oh, you are offended. Okay, you're really offended by the comparison.
Yes, I'm offended. Like, and like I would say, like right now, I would accept Ben Roethlisberger's Super Bowl success as a Drake May outcome. Like, if you offered me that, right? Because sometimes I know you offer deals with all the power that you have.
Yeah,
like I would accept that. But like, I think Drake May is just a more exciting player than that. Like he's a different genre. He's this new, you know, type of quarterback. He's like a Josh Allen light. I'm sorry if that offends you.
No, it doesn't offend me at all. Dan Orlovsky, quarterback, you know, the quarterback expert who made the comparison. He said, watching him, it's like watching young Ben Roethlisberger. Because here's the thing. So often he sheds off that arm tackler that in the pocket shove. You realize, you know, when he was coming out of school, how important that frame was. I think it's just because he's big. And then you see some of those wild throws, like Ben would make throws like that, and you're just like, good God, how did you make that one into that window? It's funny. I think I am so influenced by late Ben Roethlisberger, I don't remember making amazing throws into windows. You know, I do remember him shrugging people off.
Right. I guess, like, yeah, I was like 12 when he was making those throws, maybe like earlier. So, yeah, I definitely don't remember it. Yeah, like, it just, like, Ben was one of those guys, kind of like, you know, there's quarterback now that just chilled for way too long. Like, was not good for like a solid 5-6 years at the end.
At the end. I think that partly influences it. So it's the young Ben Roethlisberger. Yeah. Anyway, I've been amused, and I've been going along with the, you know, isn't that nice? The cute Patriots have hope now, whatever else. I'm kind of over it, I'll be honest. And I think their ascendance can taper off now. I've had enough. So There we go. I think we're literally rivals for the AFC crown, AFC East crown at this point, which I did not think would be happening that soon this year. Anyway, on to other matters. Jeffrey hit a pothole and tragedy resulted earlier this week. Oddly enough, it came on the same day that you had a story, and we'll get to the National Guard and the lease and all this other stuff we have to talk to you about. But you did write about potholes, and your story came out on the same day that Jeffrey was felled by potholes. People in Memphis are obsessed by potholes. What's happening on the pothole front?
First, can I ask a few questions about Jeffrey's disaster?
The problem is Jeffrey's been hacked. And so he is now trying to get himself unhacked.
What street was it on?
If you look at his, it was on Union. It was on Poplar. It was on Poplar right before you cross the viaduct. He was headed east.
Okay.
And anyway, just so you know, he's been hacked. If you look at his Twitter account right now, he's bought a new car thanks to his crypto investments. That's what's happening with Jeffrey. And he's
crypto mining.
Crypto. And so he's.
Oh, man, that is very extractive. Oh, my.
And so he's trying to get himself unhacked here so desperately. So we're going to try to not involve him too much in this conversation. But anyway, so it was on Poplar. Yeah.
Okay, so it was on Poplar by the viaduct. I have been rattled by such things as well there. And that is a state road. So what we're talking about, what we wrote about in the Daily Memphian, was the city of Memphis has embarked on what is a pilot program. So I'm not sure if this is permanent yet. It costs money. That's the real, thing that is the gating criteria of whether or not it continues. But instead of waiting for people such as ourselves to complain about potholes, which we often don't, we just yell about them and they don't tell the city, that the city is now sending out a crew to a zone of the city. They've cut the pilot of Memphis into 10 slices. And they're sending out a crew each week to find potholes on the more major streets, that are not state-owned. So places like Lamar, Union, Poplar, not getting the city treatment just yet. The city maybe has some ideas about working with the state on that. But the city is then going to fix those potholes. They're going to clean the storm drains, which are those things that the stormwater is allegedly supposed to go through but are often clogged. There's all sorts of things in Memphis. Find some weird stuff clogging those, and they're cleaning those out, and then they sweep the street after filling these potholes. So the whole idea is in a place, and believe it or not, and our boss, Mary Cashella, fact-checked me on this. She fact-checked me hard. Memphis gets more rain than Seattle. And so all that rain we get is...
I was astonished by that as well. Incredible.
It is a real fact.
We get it all at once. Seattle, it comes down slowly every day, right? That's the difference?
Right. That's exactly right. They have many more precipitation days versus us. We just get the deluges.
Is there a connection between rain and potholes? Is there a connection between rain and potholes?
Yes. I mean, when water gets into the cracks in the pavement, it helps create potholes.
I see.
Did you go all your years without knowing that, or is that for education?
No, I really didn't know rain and potholes. I thought of potholes as ice creating them in Buffalo. I think of, ice creating potholes in the winter. But yeah, that makes sense. Okay, I'm an idiot. You just call me out. That's fine. I get it. So, I want to backtrack on a couple things. So on Poplar and Union and quote unquote state roads, the city of Memphis has nothing to do with the potholes.
That is correct. Yes.
Really? So Memphis is just. And their prior approach was to wait for a complaint. They never went out looking for potholes previously. They just waited.
To be clear, if you get a complaint, if the city of Memphis got a complaint and they fixed one pothole and they happened to see 10 other potholes, they weren't just ignoring, I think, most of the time those other potholes. They were fixing them too. But yeah, this really came out of John Zeno, City's Director of Development Infrastructure, read Jody Callahan's piece, our Ask the Memphian series that Jody does so well.
Yeah.
And said, wow, we could really change this. We could try something new. And so that is literally what happened here.
Wow. This all goes back to one of the things, a point that you've made before on the show that I think it bears repeating. And that is, we're a giant ass city. And that creates a problem. I mean, it creates stress on the whole system, right? One of the reasons we have so many potholes is we have so many miles and miles and miles and miles and miles of roads.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, the more lane miles you have, which is just a mile of paved street. So if you're going down Poplar and there are those two lanes on either side of you and you're in the middle, there's 3 lane miles over that one stretch of mile that you travel. So, but we have a sprawl with 6,800 lane miles of city owned streets in the city. 6,800 lane miles. It's a lot. It's a 300 square mile city. And yeah, to your point, Jeff, and the one I made before is the bigger your city is geographically, the more it costs to maintain its infrastructure. If we were a more compact city, if we all lived, us Memphians, more on top of each other, it would be cheaper for all of us to maintain our city.
Okay. Onward to the task force. And what's happening around the task force, the Memphis Safe Task Force. One question I had, and this is not a story you wrote. Jane Donahoe from the Daily Memphian did a piece that's up today. It says crime data shows significant impact from task force. There had been earlier data showing that even before the task force's arrival, that crime numbers in Memphis had been going down. And this new story suggests that they continue to go down upon the arrival of the Memphis Safe Task Force. Where do we get our numbers? Like, this is from the new data dashboard, but the numbers that we were talking about last week, we were from somewhere else. Who measures this, and who do we most trust in terms of measuring this?
Yeah, I'll take the last question that you asked here first in terms of trust. The way I would phrase it, and this isn't political, this is just because we don't have a lot of transparency into this. The U.S. Marshals, which is running this operation, releases on a periodic basis data that shows what they're counting for crime stats in Memphis and as part of the Memphis State Task Force. They have historically not been very clear in those emails, those news releases. There's a situational report that gets sent every day to local people and to other people, the MLK 50. Go check it out. Catherine Burgess got her hands on one of those, and she showed that a lot of the stuff in that report, it shows there's a lot of stuff that's getting counted that maybe is MPD activity to begin with. It's ICE interactions with residents, et cetera. And so when we're talking, for example, the U.S. Marshals has a stat called illegal gun seized. I think it's about up to 230 now via the last data that I saw. It's really not clear what illegal gun means in this case because, A, illegal gun, we're in an open carry state. So a legal gun either then has to be an illegally doctored gun in some way, maybe the serial number is scraped off or it has an illegal component added to it, like a Glock switch. So it's really what I would say, this is a long answer, but it's really not clear at this point how the U.S. Marshals and the federal government and really the Department of Justice, which is over this thing, are counting these things. And then the city is, I think, the best it can, releasing data as it understands it, right? And MPD is involved in some of this, but it's not clear if all MPD stats are included. But in Jane's story, which people should check out, is really a picture of what is happening in the city and the stats that Memphis measures on a regular basis. And it's very clear at this point that the city, you know, which was already experiencing a downward climb trend really throughout the entirety of 2025 before Memphis State Task Force, there's clearly a real dip since the task force got here in some of these categories, for sure.
You can read that piece at the Daily Memphian. In terms of the MLK 50 piece that you referenced, that was something that that is distributed to local officials. Accounts for arrests, I gather. But what's interesting is they don't release that publicly. Like, why not?
No.
Why don't they tell us? I mean, I don't mean us. I don't mean us, the Daily Memphian. I mean us citizens is what I meant.
Yeah. No, I understand. Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. And, you know, it's one I think we as reporters have been asking for. We've been, you know, kind of working on people and good on Catherine from getting one of those reports. And it was, I mean, It really would be a great effort and transparency for the government to release that and for people to understand what's happening in the city because things are clearly happening. We just don't have a great picture of it.
Okay, and then finally, Sam, I referenced the story you did. Now it's way back in August about the lease negotiations. The Grizzlies do open up tonight. What's your other? I'll leave it this way. What's your understanding about where they are today?
I would say that this reporting that we have had in August, and people should please go read it. Please support our work, all our work, because it's important and it's not free. Still stands, right? There maybe have been minute movements. Right. I think that is, but that's all I'll say is that our work is in August, I think still has some staying power as to where things are. And your column, which was very good yesterday, and Chris also, mentioned it in his season preview too, which was also very good. So this is an important, I think had the line, Jeff, in your story, which I thought was the right one of like, it's kind of where the ball is, where is Memphis turning as a city? Right. And how does that impact the Grizzlies, and how do the Grizzlies impact that, right? And it's a really, I think, interesting question. But I wouldn't say that there's anything brand new to report at this time.
All right. Thank you, Sam. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
Go Bills. Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian. We got to take a break. Back in a moment.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
92.9 FM ESPN. Well, music means we're wrapping up here. See you at FedEx Forum tonight. I was supposed to be a novel tonight where I was going to be interviewing John T. Edge, who has... a terrific writer, an absolutely terrific writer, who's written a memoir about growing up in the South. And so if you're not going to the Grizzlies game, Ace Atkins is stepping in for me, the author Ace Atkins. I think he upgraded, I'll be honest. And so they'll be doing that at Novel. That is tonight. The memoir is called House of Smoke. It's by John T. Edge. Again, he's terrific. You can Google it, and you can if you're not watching Grizz, Ace Atkins and John T. Edge at Novel tonight. I will be at FedEx Forum. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming next on Jason and John. Coach Hurd and Drew Hill join their program. Coach Hurd will be with me on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jason Munn's going to join us during the first hour.
Thanks
Kyle will be with Gabe
everybody.
At 5 o'clock. Sorry.
We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for Now Work Is Done.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah.
You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you know
Browns
why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life.
Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.